In the sacred scriptures, whenever you have a guy meet a girl at a well, you're dealing with a love story. Moses met his wife Zipporah when he came to the well, and he had to drive off a bunch of thugs that were bothering Zipporah and her sisters. And after driving them off, he began to visit with them and fell in love with Zipporah there at the well. When Isaac, Abraham's son, became old enough to marry, he sent his agents back to his homeland that he had left long ago to find a wife there for his son, Isaac. They came to the well of the town, and there they found Rebekah. Jacob, on a long journey, stopped to rest at a well, and it's there that he first met the love of his life, Rachel. So the story of Jesus meeting the Samaritan woman at its very most basic level is a love story. But this is John's gospel, so we should not spend too much time on the literal level. I know that might be a little bit of a relief to those Christians who might find it a little on the dangerous side to think Jesus might find a woman attractive. So we'll follow John to that deeper symbolic level, where this is a story of the woman falling in love with God. What do we know about this woman? We know she is a profound thinker. Some call her the first Christian theologian because she has the longest sustained discourse with Jesus of any character in all four Gospels. We know that her mind is open and that she grows in knowledge as the conversation goes on. You see this in the names she gives Jesus. First, he is a Jew, one of those people that there's a lot of friction with the Samaritans. A little later, she says, "Ah, you're a prophet." And a little later, she starts wondering, could this be the Christ? And finally, the people she went to preach to proclaim, "This is the Savior of the world." We know that she is an apostle, at least as St. Paul defines the term. For she goes and preaches and brings the whole town to Jesus. She establishes a local church there in this Samaritan town. And finally, we know that she is thirsty. She has had five husbands and is now living with a man who is not her husband. The church, with its usual practice of patriarchal thinking, immediately assumes that she is a sinful woman. You know, the usual biblical temptress, lying in wait, seduce us innocent men. That's the usual interpretation. I'm not so sure of that. In the Jewish world, only a husband can divorce. The wife doesn't have that power. So this woman has probably been abandoned by five different husbands. And in Jesus' world, if that's true, and the woman does not have financial means of her own, she will be reduced to either begging or prostitution in order to survive. So the sixth fellow that she's living with now is probably something of a protection for her, to keep her from that kind of life. It's like Joseph protecting Mary, putting his cloak over her and marrying her, protecting her from the law when she was found to be pregnant before she was married. Anyway, we know that relationships haven't been the strongest part of this woman's life. So that we know that she thirsts. She thirsts not just for the water from the well, but she thirsts for the living water that Jesus is talking to her about. The living water that is a symbol of the deep love God has for her and for you and for me. A number of weeks ago, before Lent got underway, there was a little detail in one of the Sunday Gospels reading that usually gets passed over pretty quickly by preachers. It takes place in the flurry of miracles that fill out the last part of the first chapter of Mark's gospel. In the middle of all this frenzied activity, Jesus sneaks away one night and goes up on a hillside and spends the night there in prayer. In the morning, the disciples go looking for him, and upon finding him, Peter says to him, "Lord, the whole world is looking for you." The whole world is looking for you. We thirst. There up on that hillside, deep in communion with the Father, Jesus learned the compassion, the empathy, and the love that gave him the power to heal, to forgive, to cast out evil, to gather the scattered, to treat even the lowest with dignity. There on that hillside, deep in prayer, in what we theologians like to call Jesus' Abba experience, Jesus' very human heart was shaped in the image of the heart of God our Father, shaped with compassion and love. The woman thirsts. The whole world thirsts. We thirst for that same empathy and love that lie at the very essence of who God is, for the compassion that is the true source of God's power in the world. It is found when our hearts encounter the heart of God, and we are shaped by the compassion and love that God has for every living thing. The love God has for you, for me, and for every creature. We thirst in a parched and fractured world. The problems of our age, war, conflict, racial injustice, religion that often serves only the minister or the institution, economic greed, corrupted power, the need for control, manipulation, lying, deceit. The problems of our age all have their roots in hearts that are misshapen. We come here because we thirst. We gather around the altar so that we might encounter the heart of God as it is revealed in Jesus, in his life, his death, and his resurrection that he carried out for others. We shape our hearts by offering our lives as Jesus did, for one another and to God in service. For that is the only sacrifice that the Father finds pleasing. We come here this morning to fall in love. We come to have our hearts shaped in the image of the heart of God. We come so that we might no longer thirst.